Welcome to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. She absolutely knocks me out, and I love her songwriting. That's exactly how I feel about Winston-Salem native singer-songwriter Sarah Siskind. But it turns out I stole those two quotes of high praise from legendary singer Bonnie Raitt and Amy Grant. After leaving her mark in Nashville, Sarah calls the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia home these days, and she'll be coming down the mountain when she comes to Rinalda House next week. Then the Charlotte-based band Amigo has been carving out a little slice of heaven there for the past few years with their eclectic country punk East Texas genre-busting sound. Amigo is the real thing. Eddie Garcia peeks behind the curtain with Amigo singer, songwriter, and guitarist Slade Baird. Second Spring Arts is proving that life after 60 just gets better and better when you get up the gumption to try something new, and Music for a Sunday Evening in the Park is bringing new outdoor concerts to a different Greensboro park every Sunday all summer long, next after this news. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. After tearing it up in Nashville for years, Winston-Salem native Sarah Siskind is now a Virginia-based singer-songwriter, living up there with her family in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains. Southern Living magazine calls Sarah Nashville's best new voice, but her music transcends category. It's a fantastic blend of the traditional and modern, and it's in high demand. Alison Krauss has recorded her songs, as have Randy Travis, Paul Brady, and many others. Bonnie Raitt considers Sarah one of her favorite singers and songwriters, and Justin Vernon of Bon Iver considers her a vocal teacher. Last year, Justin's label re-released Sarah's first album from 2003 titled Covered, and we're sampling from the title track right now. Where do you go when you are feeling expired? It's been a triumphant return for Sarah Siskind. For years, she battled sinus issues, resulting in a string of surgeries that prevented her from touring. But she's back on tour now with her CD, Novel. And Thursday afternoon, June 5th, she'll be live in concert at Rinalda House's Summertime Social Backyard Barbecue and Brews.
Where is the shelter when your building is burning?
When I sing any song, whether it be for an intimate gathering or for a large theater, I think, you know, I have to go back to the state I was in when I wrote the song and reconnect to the story that it's about. And that's something that's really, I think, powerful about original music. You know, folks that write their own songs is that they created the story that the song is about, so when they perform it, it's as close to them, more close to them than anyone else. And so that's what I do. Each song is sort of like a play or a moment in time that I created when I wrote the song. So during performance, I just transport back to that moment. And quite a few of the songs are sad and on the intense side, but you know, each song was written for a reason. As far as, you know, I'm concerned as the writer, I mean, every song comes out either from an experience or from, you know, watching a friend go through something or a family member go through something. I've written a lot of songs about people who are close to me or people that I care about. I transport back to that story when I sing the song.
Is that transporting back difficult ever, and how does it morph over or evolve over time?
Yeah, it can be difficult. I think with Lovin's for Fools, that's a good song to point out as far as a song that I wrote a while ago that is still, you know, floating around in the universe. I had that song come out on an album, oh, I can't even remember now, I think it was 2004, an album called Studio Living Room. And it was a sad breakup song and about parting ways and other things, you know, just a lot of things that I think everyone can relate to. And even though songs can be sad when I write them, they also can be healing for me. But I had someone discover that song, Justin Vernon, who is Bon Iver, and he took that song and started performing it in his shows with Bon Iver.
Forever, I will not tell her I told
And then they blew up and became a very popular band. And that song has taken a life, you know, taken on a life of its own because he introduced it to so many people. And I get requested to sing that song all the time now, mostly because Justin sang it with Bon Iver. And it's interesting, even though the song itself is pretty heartbreaking, I enjoy singing it now because it has really, I've just heard so many stories from his fans who have found me, who have told me how much the song has meant to them and that it's been a healing story for them. I had a couple come to a show of mine once and they had the lyrics tattooed on their arm. And that was probably the craziest thing that anyone's ever done so far with one of my songs. But so now when you ask about it evolving over time, it brings me joy to sing it because so many people have been moved by it. So it's really interesting how it has sort of a double meaning. And quite a few of my songs do that. Well, go on and love her.
You just mentioned Justin Vernon, and I wanted to point out for listeners that, I mean, singer-songwriters like Alison Krauss have recorded a couple of your songs, Randy Travis and other. For anyone who's written music and tried to break into the scene, that's an amazing achievement. I'm wondering, could you put that in perspective and being in the Nashville scene and cutting through like that?
Oh, I still pinch myself every day. I'm extremely, extremely grateful that my songs made their way to the ears of folks like Allison and Justin. I spent 14 years in Nashville, and I met people every day who had just moved there. I mean, trying to be in the music business and either write a hit song or become a star singer. I mean, it's just infiltrated with that, you know, activity of folks coming to be heard. And, you know, what's really magical about how it happened for me is that I wasn't pursuing the goal of getting my songs recorded by other people. I had only lived in Nashville for a couple of years when Allison heard me, and I was still getting my feet wet and meeting musicians, and you know, I was still discovering who I was as an artist, because I'd written so many songs, but they were across so many genres that as an artist, I was still trying to decide exactly what sound I had and all these things. So I just played a lot of shows. That's what I did. I did a lot of writers' nights and a lot of concerts, and it all unfolded organically that a friend of a friend heard me sing at a club in Nashville, and she was a great close friend of Allison's, and she heard me sing and just thought Allison should hear me, and she came up to me afterwards and asked if she could give some of my songs to Allison, and of course I said yes. and that's how it happened. And once Allison recorded one of my songs, things just sort of snowballed from there, and it was because of that song that I built my career on, because of it happening. It wasn't the other way around. You know, I'm very lucky that it happened that way, but it's also, to this day, sometimes when I'm pushing myself, you know, or being hard on myself because I'm not maybe achieving something that I want to achieve, I remind myself I landed in this spot organically because I was doing what I loved, and I wasn't doing it for the wrong reason. I was writing songs, and I was playing my songs for people. And really, that was all that I was doing at the time. And because I was doing what I needed to do, the stars aligned, and that path was opened to me to be able to make a career out of it. And here I am, gosh, it's been at least 10 years, maybe 12 years now, I've been doing this for a living, and like I said, I pinch myself every day that I'm able to do it.
You know, when I hear a song, like, I'm going to give another example, Sarah, Falling Stars, I'm thinking of the line, I thought I could do it all better on my own, burn it down and build it back up. For me, as a listener and someone who appreciates, as anyone, I mean, as, I'm a music lover, I hear just simple, direct, clear writing, and I'm wondering what sort of feedback you got from someone like Allison about your writing, or what struck her particularly, or Randy Travis?
Well, Allison has just been so wonderful to me, and I think she's said some things to me along the same lines of what you just said, that I am, lyrically, I tend to not use very much fluff, and I just cut right to the core of what I'm trying to sing about. I mean, I still like to be poetic, but when I sit down to write a song, if I can help it, I really try and clear my mind and really honor the song and the story that I want to tell and not think of anything else as far as how would this be perceived or what should I say here. And I try and silence that voice and really just trust that if I'm sitting down to write a song about something, that it's a story that I need to tell, and that method has really worked well for me, and I think that it creates a type of honesty in my writing. I thought I could make it there, better on my own. Everything in the backseat. I thought I could make it there, ahead of the storm.
What's it like being on the road with Bonnie Raitt?
Oh, it's just unlike anything else in the world. Some of the best days and nights of my life. I was 6 months pregnant on that tour, so I it was surreal. You know, I was dealing with being pregnant and all the emotions and, you know, insomnia and all the things that go with that, on top of being with one of my heroes every day and getting to go out and actually sing some with her on stage. I hardly have words to explain what a gem she is. She's a true artist and a true entertainer, performer, singer, but the way that she treats people on the road, not just people she knows, but fans, people she doesn't know. She just has respect for people and is so kind. And I really, really learned a lot from being on the road with her. Huge thrill. I've been too long at the fair.
And Lord, I just can't stand it anymore. Did you grow up in Winston-Salem, or what time did you spend in this
I did. Country?
You
born
grew
and
up
raised.
How about that?
Yeah.
What does it give you kind of in terms of your worldview on music, for lack of a better way of putting it?
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely, I feel like I've come full circle. You know, moving back to this part of the country, I'm in Central Virginia now, and I'm just about 3 hours due north, northeast of Winston now. So, gosh, I think, you know, it's common with anybody who grows up somewhere and just wants to move away, and then they move away and then they appreciate all the things that were there. And so I definitely, now that I'm an adult, I think back on all the wonderful musical things that happened in the Winston-Salem area, just there in the state of North Carolina. You know, my parents, they had a bluegrass band. They also played Celtic music, but they took me to bluegrass festivals, fiddling conventions, and you know, I grew up listening to WFDD, and when I was 14 years old, I played there with Doc Watson and Maya Angelou, one of my best memories. So I'm very partial to WFDD.
Oh, what a great memory that is. Was that back in the Paul Brown days?
Yes, it was.
From all across.
He was a good friend of my parents.
So. Oh, wonderful. Well, we'll look forward to welcoming you back home when you get here. And thanks so much, Sarah.
Not a sparrow in the mountains, out of sight.
Winston-Salem native, singer-songwriter Sarah Siskin. Her new album, Novel, is available on iTunes, and you'll find links to more at WFDD.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. You'll find her re-release CD covered there as well. But you can also hear Sarah live in concert, and in one of this area's finest outdoor venues to boot, at the beautiful, shaded Rolling Hills backyard of Rinalda House Museum of American Art. On Thursday, June 5th from 6 to 9, Sarah will be performing at Rinalda's Summertime Social Backyard Barbecue and Brews. This wonderful annual event celebrates the beginning of summer with live music, barbecue samples, beer tastings, games on the lawn, and plenty of arts activities. Tickets are just $15. Kids 5 and under get in free, and you'll find more information on our website, WFDD.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend.
Mountains, I feel closer to God. I'm a shepherd, not a soldier. In the mountains, out of sight. If you can find me.
I'm David Ford, and when we return from this little break, it'll be time to get back in touch with a good old friend. Amigo, the band, is back, and Eddie Garcia gets up close and personal with Amigo guitarist-singer Slade Baird next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Loads of arts coming your way later on the show with the Second Spring Arts Festival and music for a Sunday evening in the park. Doesn't that sound nice? But first, Amigo is back on the road, and Eddie Garcia is here with the latest.
The Charlotte, North Carolina-based band Amigo has been carving out a special place in the local music scene for the past few years. A culmination of the band members' past musical and personal experiences, Amigo have a sound that comes in like an East Texas wind, infusing a country rock aesthetic with punk rock abandon and art school ingenuity. Their recently released debut LP, Might Could, is an engaging collection of upbeat songs delivered with authority, humor, and a rowdy rock and roll spirit. Visit WFDD.org to hear tracks from Might Could, and locally, you can pick up a copy on CD or vinyl at Earshot Records, as well as record shops across the state. You have two chances to catch Amigo live in the Triad this weekend. First, an intimate performance at Earshot Records on Saturday, May 31st at 5 p.m., then a set at the Garage later that same night, along with Raleigh's Octopus Jones and Winston-Salem singer, songwriter, visual artist Molly Grace, who's putting down the brush for the evening and picking up her guitar. I sat down with Amigo songwriter Slade Baird and got some insight into Amigo's genre-bashing music and some of the inspiration behind their slyly positive songs. Tell me about the early days of Amigo. When did you, Adam, and Mark get your start?
We started about 3.5 years ago. I was living in Pennsylvania, which was like the worst idea I ever had in my life, was to move to Pennsylvania with a girl that I got married to after knowing her for about 6 months. and inevitably that whole thing went about like you'd imagine. And so I was stuck in a strange town, and Philly's a strange town. Like, no matter what you think of it, you might have had a great experience there. I had plenty of good times there. Saw a lot of great concerts. But I was kind of stuck up there working in like a cubicle. And one day the realization just hit me that I could very easily probably retire from this place someday, never having had any adventure in my life whatsoever. And music's always been a big part of my life. So anyway, I just decided, you know what? I hate this place. I'm going to move back home. I'm going to get back together with my friends that play the kind of music I like. And we're going to start a band, and we're going to make something and do something with our lives, which is like a weird, you know, it seems like something that you say when you're way younger, dude, and you're like, I'm going to do something with my life. But I kind of found myself in a rut in my early 30s. I think if I hadn't had some life events that sort of shook me up, that I could very easily have died a very boring old man with no stories to tell whatsoever.
So you shook things up, you had some life changes, and you were inspired to come back to North Carolina and play music and focus on music, which has always been a big part of your life. So when you got together with the guys and started playing, was the idea of how you wanted the band to sound fully formed, or did you just kind of throw music at the wall and see what happened?
I had a lot of sort of preconceived ideas about the kind of band that I wanted to start, but I think you get a few different dudes in the room and bring your own special things. And because of that, something special started happening. And so we got kind of a weird mix of certain influences. But in general, I think that I'm hearing about 85% of what I had in my head when I first brought some songs to the table and said, hey, you guys want to play these songs with me?
Well, I'm building a gospel ship just in case there's an end to this old world one of these days. Now I don't claim to have all the answers, so I'm just gonna play it safe.
You know, listening to Might Could, the music has a real sense of stylistic intention. That's why I asked that, was it fully formed? It sounds like you really set out to make that kind of cosmic American record in the vein of Graham Parsons, but you can hear other influences coming in. What I want to know is, what is it about that style or genre or feel? What is it about that that speaks to you?
Man, that's a good question. Basically, when I look at my record collection, I see a real serious theme. Bands drawing from kind of the same well of influences. None of them trying to necessarily be any other band in particular. But yeah, Graham Parsons' music definitely factors in very heavily. He just had some sort of weird authenticity and enthusiasm for that type of roots music, which incorporates all kinds of cool things from Hank Williams to Southern gospel music to folk music and basically just any kind of early American roots music. Not to point the finger at anybody, but I mean, I think that a lot of people making that type of music make the mistake of only having like one or two big, I mean, maybe it's their knowledge of music that's limited, but I think if you open yourself up to all kinds of different things, that opens up such a world of possibilities that it keeps things exciting. I think, in my mind, I'm straight up ripping this record off. You know, I got a real specific, you know, this harmony part is going to be, I hear the refrain from, like, Calendar Girl every day of the year. I totally ripped that off and put that in one of my songs, and but I'm the only person that knows that I ripped that off. And I think so much great music probably comes from that, from somebody saying, I'm going to steal this idea right here, but it's so genuine, the reference or the spirit of giving and taking that's so much a part of popular music, American music, it's like it doesn't come off as you're stealing something from somebody. It just comes off as like you're enthusiastic and kind of appropriating it for your love of it. And that's kind of like where my influence comes from as a songwriter, is taking something that I'm very enthusiastic about and then finding a new level of enthusiasm by creating something of my own and then sprinkling it with little things that get me excited about hearing music for the first time. Like if I could go back and hear my favorite record for the first time, I sort of have a chance to do that by taking what it was that excited me about that record and creating something new.
This old girl keeps haunting me from where I left her.
There's a lot of really strong melodies and a real focus and attention on the lyrical content. You know, when this enthusiasm is building up in you and you're working on songs, does it all come spilling out lyrically, or do you kind of have the more of the music framework in mind first?
I'd say 90% of the time the music comes first. Like I'll come up with a chord progression and a melody will arise out of a whole bunch of nonsense. I always like want to share it real quick with the band, so I'll like shoot them a voice memo, but I'll be totally embarrassed to share it because I'll be talking completely in some alien language or singing in some alien language. And then I end up spending a ton of time working on the lyrics. Usually I'll have just a notebook with some general ideas about, okay, this will be like a refrain for a song, or this will be, you know, a feeling that I want to sing about. I end up spending like probably the most time working on the words to the songs. I've had a couple of occasions, a couple lucky occasions where it just sort of all comes out at once, almost fully formed. And I guess that some people talk about that as just being a medium for that, like it's just some kind of cosmic gift, which I'll buy that. It definitely, I'll take those gifts anytime I get them.
The lyrics to Best Laid Plans, the first couple lines are, we've got the totems of long dead cultures and the latest shiny thing, so they'll never find a cure for cancer, but they can sure as hell whiten your teeth. I really like that, and it really lays out the groundwork for what the song's going to be about.
That's actually one of those songs that was sort of like one of those cosmic gifts. And I was reading a book about Doug Somm, the late Doug Somm from Texas, who was a big inspiration. I come to the end of the chapter, I was just like, man, this book's so good. I could just finish this book today in one sitting. But then it occurred to me, what would Doug Somm be doing right now? And the answer is that Doug Somm would probably go write 5 songs right now, but I was lucky to write 1 song. So, you know, I started working on a tune and it kind of came out real quick and I was real psyched about it. But I had a lot, it was over this one summer where I just, it was like I had 3 different people in my life just die within, you know, a couple months of each other. It was just one after the other. So I was thinking about some kind of heavy stuff. And that's sort of what is reflected lyrically there, even though it's kind of a upbeat kind of numbers on the record, or more anthemic kind of things, but it's sort of a defiance to that anthemic nature, just because I was dealing with some heavy stuff. I think those lyrics that you just mentioned were probably the starting point, and the rest of it kind of fell out from there, thinking about, you know, losing people that I love, and also thinking about my own, you know, how much longer am I going to be here, and why do I still feel like a complete screw up and maybe way younger than I actually am? And when do you start, you know, feeling like you got stuff together? I'm sure that the answer to that is that maybe you never do. That was like a reflection of my total confusion with the universe at that moment.
Well, another song that seems to pull from different genres, but still in that kind of grand American tradition, is Miss You Every Day That You're Gone. It starts with kind of a Beach Boys-ish bop bop yummy yummy, maybe?
Yeah.
In the beginning, and it, you know, it has a saxophone solo, which is great, which you don't hear that often in this context, or
right.
Sort of unexpected, but perfect the way it fits in there. So, how did that song come together with those, you know, seemingly different elements, but that they all just kind of work cohesively together?
Yeah, that one was like the last song that I wrote for the record, but it was among the first that I sort of had music for. I mean, it was just, you know, your basic little rock chord progression, but it was real slow, and it had like one of those little country bass lines, and it was total Hank Williams kind of wannabe song, real sad. I even had the chorus for it, you know, way before we started the band. But when we got into the studio, we needed like one more song. I knew there was going to be one more song. I just didn't know what it was going to be. So I had this little story song, little composite story song about a breakup, about some real semi-specific moments, little snapshots of the dissolving of a relationship. I thought that combining a sad breakup song with a sad melody and tempo, I just thought how sad that would be. So I figured, you know, what would happen if we sped this thing up? And because of the music, chord progression, the kind of bounce to the rhythm, started sounding pretty similar to like a Gary U.S. Bonds kind of party song. And so that's how we decided, you know, we're gonna put these doo-wop vocals in there and these hand claps. And you know, while we got a party going on, we might as well invite the saxophone player and, you know, really make it a 60s, or, you know, late 50s, early 60s pop radio hit.
I'm not sure if you set out to have a theme with the record or not lyrically, but even the first song, the kickoff, Where Have All the Bad Times Gone, which we're going to play here in a minute, that and some of the other songs we've talked about, it seems like the idea is triumph over negativity. It's like the songs have positive vibes, but not in a saccharine way. They'll talk about some of the stuff that went wrong and didn't go right, but it presents it in a way of like, well, I'm going to get over this and everything's going to be good afterwards. I mean, did you see that forming together? Is that just me, or was that the idea?
That's not something that I've consciously thought about writing. It's just sort of what came out. But I think you're totally right. I mean, I think if there's a conscious effort to put the good vibes, the positive, you know, sort of vibrations to come out, I think that it's probably because we are making an inclusive kind of music. That's something that I think about a lot, is how do you make music in sort of a postmodern sort of climate of hip, indie rock, and intellectual, very fussed over art kind of environment. How do you make something that's sort of for everybody without tailoring it to be for some kind of mass market where you're trying your hardest not to offend anyone or test market it, you know? How do you make something that's honestly and truly kind of, you're throwing it out there for everyone and it's inclusive rather than exclusive? And I think in general, that's kind of my worldview, is that I want to be part of a shared experience with humanity rather than just, you know, making some music just for me and a bunch of people that dress like me. You know, I don't wake up in the morning and read like motivational books or anything, because I'm not about all that. But I try to temper, I try to have a balance to where, you know, if I'm writing a song and it's about some bummed out stuff, I do like to have the little, the kind of duality to it, so that, you know, even if the song's a major bummer, at least you can tap your foot to it, at least you can dance to it.
I'm not a sucker, but I play one in real life. I got pockets full of magical beans.
Singer, songwriter, and guitarist Slade Baird. Amigo's debut album, Might Could, is available right now on CD and vinyl, online, or at your friendly neighborhood record store. You have two chances to catch Amigo live in the Triad this weekend. First, an intimate performance at Earshot Records in Winston-Salem on Saturday, May 31st at 5 p.m. Then, at 9 p.m. on Saturday, May 31st, Amigo takes the stage at The Garage in downtown Winston-Salem, along with the Raleigh-based band Octopus Jones and Winston-Salem's own singer, songwriter, and visual artist Molly Grace. Visit WFDD.org for more on all these artists and to hear tracks from Amigo's LP, Might Could. For 88.5 WFDD, I'm Eddie Garcia.
Bed inside slide obscured my mental outlook. Then Johnny took his gun and went home. Still sometimes I miss the comfort of the shadow.
This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and we're going to take another short intermission now. When we get back, why do young people get all the fun? Well, Second Spring Arts is here to tell you that they don't, and they've got a big multi-generational arts bash planned to prove it next when Triad Arts Weekend continues.
I'm David Ford, and this is Triad Arts Weekend.
Second Spring Arts is gearing up for its May Festival. Their 2014 competition for artists ages 60 and above will showcase original works encompassing virtually all media, including photography, quilts, sculpture, ceramics, stained glass, and more. This year, Second Spring Arts is adding a literary contest and anthology as well. Second Spring Arts makes arts of all types accessible for seniors and highlights the connection between the arts and the health and well-being of older individuals. They also promote research along those lines. Founder and President Nancy Hall and festival organizer and Second Wind Publishing founder Mike Simpson recently spoke with me about it.
We believe and we know from research now that people who are involved in some type of creative activity are healthier both mentally and physically. Last year, one of the things we had was a keynote speaker who shared the results of research that indicates that there's less depression and less doctor's visits. And of course, you know, when that occurs, it's better for the economy of the community as well. So we feel like we have a sound footing for it. And, you know, when you look at it sort of from a spiritual basis, everyone is born creative. And some develop it more and make life careers of it, and others do not. But then this is an opportunity at this time in life for them to pick it up or to learn something new. And this concept has been captured by AARP and what they call Reimagine. And so this is a period of life that you can begin to do some things, to create, to explore, which you didn't have time or the energy to do before. So we wanted to showcase some of the best we had and have that as an inspiration to motivate others to become involved.
Having just crossed the half-century mark myself, thoughts of aging, what I've learned, wisdom acquired along the way, definitely at the forefront. And that's some of the criteria for the writing submissions.
There are some wonderful submissions. This is all going to be put together in an anthology that will be available at the festival. We'll publish it, and it'll be available, you know, for folks that want it. And the net proceeds of that will go back to the next festival that we're going to do for Second Spring.
Well, I don't want you to, I mean, you can't let us know who the winners are yet, but maybe we hear a selection from maybe an interesting one or two.
Yes. Well, one of the things that happens, those of us who have attained this wonderful being a senior citizen, I'm sorry, David, but 50's not quite there yet.
I'm on my way, though. I'm coming fast behind you.
This is a poem called Yoga Class. It's written by a wonderful author in this area, also a novelist whose name is Susan Sermon. And she deals in a beautiful way with the fact that inside of us, regardless of the age of our bodies, inside of us is this 18, 21-year-old person who still is surprised sometimes at what age does. This is what she's written in her poem called Yoga Class. In the pose of a child, unexpected tears welled up and streamed down my face, supposedly grieving for the flexible young woman no longer evident. As quickly as they came, the tears stopped. When I remembered to breathe, through the breath, those stiff, immovable places softened. Through the breath, I discovered a vibrant, energetic woman of 70 still here, and I embraced her, knowing she is still, ever, my child. Now that's indicative of the quality of the work that we received, and we look forward to sharing that.
Mike, you've whet my appetite for more. Did you bring in another poem?
I did.
Could you share one?
You know, there's a colleague of mine. I have to tell you, I'm a retired minister. And there is a fellow here in town who is a retired minister, and he's sort of a Renaissance man. His name is Bill Gramley. A lot of people know Bill. I've competed against him in the Senior Olympics, and I'll tell you, he's very fast. I first came to know him because of his artwork, the pastels that he does, and he teaches people to do that. But what I didn't know that I found out is that Bill is also a poet, and he has submitted several beautiful poems. One in particular that is fairly brief, I thought I would share. It's called Seasons. Someone spoke of the seasons of life, and when you're in one season, you don't know when it will end. There is the season of endurance, and you hold your tongue and pray for might and a truce for your agony. As you lie beneath the covers, turn on the music and float away. The next day is the same, and you pray this empty ride across silhouetted landscapes will yield some color and end when laughter echoes across the ceiling of your mind. There is the season of regrets, and why you didn't tell your parents you loved them, and why you didn't ask that girl across the room for a date, and why you didn't quit smoking sooner, and why you didn't carry the ball when they handed it to you. There is the season of sorrow when you look through the yearbook and remember Ruth and that Costa kid who all have died, and you realize how alive they were, and you wish you had spent more time with them now that they are gone. There is a season of hope, when not only the earth sprouts green again, but your heart beats with a warm passion for the everyday chores and errands, and nothing can be less than wondrous, be it garden dirt or the distant sound of wrens trying to chase a cat away, and twilight has never been so sweet. That's Bill Gramley.
Really thoughtful. I want to ask you, just because there's this 500-pound gorilla in the room, the fear of the unfamiliar. Yeah. And I know it does not get easier as one ages. So what would you say to that person who may be on the fence about trying something new in the arts realm, but they're struck by this fear of the unfamiliar? How has it impacted you? What would you tell that person?
Well, I would say that it's worth trying it on a step-by-step level, just the idea of putting your foot in the water, you know, testing it out. I know last year one of the things we had was a testimony from a woman who had been in clinical service at the hospital and, of course, had never done anything at all in this area. And she took a class at Sawtooth, I think it was in pottery, and she was thrilled at the notion of her having created something on her own. I don't know what the pot looked like, and to her it didn't matter. You know, the fact that she had done something new with herself was very satisfying.
Second Spring Arts founder and president Nancy Hall and Second Wind Publishing founder and festival organizer Mike Simpson. This year's festival kicks off Friday night, May 30th at the Milton Rhodes Arts Center and Hanesbrands Theater in Winston-Salem with the North Carolina Black Repertory Theater performing excerpts from the musical Crowns. Audience members are encouraged to sport their favorite hats to the event. They'll be judged in the best awarded prizes. It'll be an intergenerational festival too, with Ann Gill from Dancing Classrooms presenting her students in live dance performance, and Nathan Ross Freeman will showcase his authoring action students and their work as well. Second Spring Arts Festival 2014 runs through May 31st, and you'll find links to more at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Live music by some of the Triad's best bands in a beautiful outdoor setting. That's MUSEP, Music for a Sunday Evening in the Park. This wonderful Greensboro tradition is free and open to the public. This year, MUSEP is celebrating its 35th anniversary by adding new bands to the performance lineup and new Gate City venues as well. MUSEP begins in June and will run through the end of August. Greensboro City Arts Director Jennifer Hance provides the summer preview through July 4th.
Down the road.
So MUSEP 2014 kicks off this year in June on the 8th, a Sunday, and that's a 6 p.m. start with the Martha Bassett Band, and well, she's well-known in this area.
Yes, so we start at 6 p.m. at Blandwood Mansion, which is a beautiful facility here in downtown Greensboro, and we'll have the Martha Bassett Band at 6 p.m., followed by Wally West Little Big Band at 7:15. So those two groups, we have a little bit of Americana, folk rock with Martha Bassett, and then we've got jazz, sort of a big band feel, but with a smaller amount of people with the Wally West Little Big Band.
And the Blandwood Mansion, should point out for listeners, I mean, this is an historic home that dates back to a governor of the
governor
state?
Governor Moorhead, yes.
Okay.
And it's an absolutely beautiful facility. And we set up on their front lawn, and our stage will be set up in the street there facing the big front lawn of the mansion.
So you get Martha Bassett Band with Americana and some folk rock, and then followed quick on the heels with an evening of jazz, the Wally West Little Big Band. And for those not in the know, Wally West, truly one of the finest saxophonists in the state, if not the region, and beyond. Greensboro Big Band coming back this year on the 15th, followed by the Philharmonia of Greensboro for an evening of classical and pops on the 22nd. And then it's time for some funk and soul. And on the 29th, you've got Sweet Dreams in a new venue.
Yes, we're going to be out at Gateway Gardens, which is the newest public park here in Greensboro, and it is a beautiful facility if people have not been out there. They have a great lawn and sort of an amphitheater-style setting, and we're going to be out there by the big icon fountain. And so we'll have performances out there, and people will be able to spread out on the grass and really enjoy one of our newest facilities.
We're about to lock it in!
And some nice public art on display there as well, as I recall.
Yes, there's a lot of public art. They have butterfly sculptures. They have a really neat caterpillar tunnel with these colored discs where light comes through. They have an alphabet arch. They have just tons of art throughout that garden. So it's really a neat place for kids to walk through as well as those of us that are young at heart as well.
All right, and for those of us who need a little throwback to yesteryear, we've got some R&B on the program following Sweet Dreams with Knights of Soul, and you get some good blues and jazz along the way as well.
Yes, they're a fun group. They're a really great group to get up and dance to.
Following that performance in July, kicking it off on the 4th, you've got the special Philharmonia of Greensboro concert with some more classical and pops, and I'm sure that's going to be a very patriotic tribute.
Yes, that concert is a pops concert at the 4th of July fireworks concert. So we'll have a sort of pops and light classical concert that'll go on before the fireworks. And then during the fireworks, the group will play marches and some more patriotic music during that time.
Greensboro City Arts Director Jennifer Hantz. Music for a Sunday evening in the park celebrating its 35th year begins Sunday, June 8th, with the Martha Bassett Band at 6 o'clock and the Wally West Little Big Band at 7:15 on the lawn of beautiful Blandwood Mansion. It's one of America's truly great historic homes, the earliest portions of which were completed in 1795. You'll find links to the complete MUSEP Performance Series calendar, a different concert at a different Greensboro park every Sunday through August 24th, at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Well, that's all for today's show. Our technical producer is Eddie Garcia. Our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. And our intern is Andre Wallace. You'll find podcasts of Triad Arts Weekend and archived episodes at WFDD.org. And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And as always, you can drop us a line with questions, comments, and suggestions. That email address is triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.